Pictures, the first motion picture to offer to the daring a look into the final maddening space between life and death. To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie.
What do you mean you're not going to bed tonight?
Michael and I are going to indulge in an all-night orgy of sex and violence.
What, in the drawing room?
Yeah. First, we're going to have sex with the headless corpse of the Virgin astronaut.
Make the carpet get awfully sticky.
It's a video nasty.
It's a carpet farty.
The only trouble is we can't get the bastard to work.
Well, I'm not surprised if he's dead.
Not the astronaut, the video.
Oh, have we got the video?
Yes, we've got our video!
There's no time.
The time is
13
o'clock. You guys, welcome to episode 75. Now, if you read the description below, then you will already know that this is another Just Me episode. Sorry about that, but there were some, not exactly complications with Tom's dad, but there were a few kind of things that made him want to stay longer. Now, I just got an update like right before I started recording this. And actually the, like I said, he had the surgery a week ago and it actually went quite well, but the recovery process was a little slower than they were expecting. And they had to keep him under sedation for several days until they could see if his heart was going to be able to work on its own and stuff like that when they took him off the ventilator and things like that. Now, for a while, there was like no change and they weren't really sure. And they thought initially that they were going to have to put in a permanent pacemaker. But I'm recording this on Sunday morning, and I just got news from Tom about 10 minutes ago that actually his dad has really bounced back today, and he really seems like he's doing very well. He's awake, he's talking, and stuff like that. So now the doctors are thinking maybe they won't have to put in the pacemaker, and that everything is probably going to be okay. But the thing is that when Tom thought that they were going to put the pacemaker in and stuff like that, he canceled his previous flight and was actually going to get a flight for Monday, the day before this episode goes up, but then he couldn't get that flight. Now, the only other cheap flight available for this week is the Friday after this episode comes out. So we actually got him that flight. So he will be back in Florida on January 26th. Which means that this should be the last regular episode without Tom. I probably will have to do another movie review without him, and I'm telling you right now it will probably be Suspiria, because that's one I've wanted to do for a while, and I just recently rewatched it, and it's a movie that Tom hasn't really seen. So I will probably do that one, and that one will also be me alone. But after that, then he should be back. He basically told me, he's like, I'm coming back on the 26th. Regardless, you know, he's been gone. He'll have been gone for 2 weeks by then, which, you know, it's a long time. So I still miss him, but I'm glad his dad is doing much better and hopefully will be well on the road to recovery by the time Tom comes back. And again, thank you very much, everybody that commented on the YouTube video and sent me messages on Facebook and stuff like that, you know, asking about Tom and concerned about his dad and stuff like that. And, you know, giving me words of support about having to do the show by myself, because I really don't. And like I said, I mentioned this on the last episode, it's a lot harder to do the show by myself than I thought it would be, because I admit I kind of feel like a tool just sitting in my home office talking to myself. And actually, I've been putting off doing this show and stuff like that. Now, originally, as you will see from the title card and the title of the video, and everything like that, I'm going to be discussing the infamous UK video nasty phenomenon from the early 1980s. Now, when I thought that Tom was going to be coming back for this episode, I had actually planned to do another one of our breakdowns of the episodes of A Haunting, because a couple people had asked when we were going to do another one and stuff like that. So I had actually set up everything to do that episode. But then when I found out that he wasn't going to be back for episode 75, I decided to push that one back, because you know, I like A Haunting and stuff like that, but that's kind of like Tom really loves that show. And I always kind of feel like, you know, when we do breakdowns of those episodes, he's kind of got to be here for that because it's not going to be any fun without him here. We'll probably be doing another episode of A Haunting when he comes back again next week. And also, if you haven't checked it out already, I posted another movie review of just me by myself doing one of my favorite movies of all time, David Lynch's Mulholland Drive from 2001. So if you haven't checked that out, you might want to check that out. And I'll just do my quick little shout outs. Obviously, Faceless Villain, if you want to check that out. I still have a few audio codes left, and thank you to everybody that has requested them and that is going to write reviews and things like that. Also, if you'd like to support the show, go to our Patreon page at 13 o'clock podcast. And also, we have a PayPal if you would rather not use Patreon. I'll probably do this again at the end of the show, so I'm not going to get into it too much now. So as I said, now the main portion of the show today is going to be about video nasties, which is actually something that it's a topic that I've wanted to do probably since way back in like episode 2 when we talked about the Satanic Panic. It was one of the first topics that I wrote down, but we just never really got around to it. I'm kind of more the horror movie connoisseur, much more than Tom is. So it just kept kind of getting put off and stuff like that. But I've been wanting to do it for a while. So I figured, you know, since he's not here, I decided to do this one. And also I'm going to do, before that, as I usually do, as our new feature in 2018, I'm going to do a current event. So let's kind of start out with that, and then we will go on from there. Now, for our current event topic, I chose something that a lot of you probably read about because this actually made the rounds of a lot of the mainstream news channels as kind of like a creepy news of the weird type story, and it's really pretty horrifying and pretty horrific. And this is the tale of the Turpin family. Now, David and Louise Turpin, originally from Texas, but now living in California, specifically in Paris, California. Now, they have 13 children. Up until very recently, it was thought that they were quite a happy family. A lot of pictures on their social media and stuff like that of them and all their 13 children. All the children dressed the same. A lot of them had similar haircuts, which, you know, a little weird, but nothing illegal about that. A lot of pictures of them from Disneyland. Evidently, they had yearly passes and would take their 13 children to Disneyland every year, and they would have these elaborately staged photos with the Disney characters and all the kids dressed the same and stuff like that. David and Louise Turpin also recently renewed their wedding vows with a chapel with Elvis presiding over and everything like that. So there are also pictures on the internet of them in their wedding outfits looking all lovey-dovey with all of their children around them dressed alike and also with Elvis and stuff like that. Now, as is often the case when you have these pictures of this supposedly ridiculously happy family and when everyone's making such a big deal about, look how happy we are, look, everyone's dressed the same, it's adorable and stuff like that, there was some really, really super sketchy shit going on behind the scenes. The Turpin family famously got into the news because one of their daughters, and their 13 children, some of them are adults, I should note. They range in age from 2 years old, a toddler. The oldest one is 29. But very recently, one of their 17-year-old daughters took a cell phone out of the house, climbed out of the window, and escaped and went to the police and stuff like that. Now, she had pictures and all this other kind of shit. And she tells the authorities that her parents are keeping her and all of her siblings captive in the house. They are not allowed to leave. Some of them are shackled to the furniture. They have been underfed and things like that. Now, at this stage, they don't think there was no evidence of any kind of sexual abuse, but for sure the kids have been starved and things like that. Obviously and happily, the parents have been arrested, charged with torture and child endangerment, and will probably and have a court hearing coming up or has already passed when this comes out. Bail has been set at $9 million each. Now, the interesting thing is that, you know, when the daughter went to the authorities and stuff like that, the cops went to the house and they found 12 of the children in the house that looked dirty. They were malnourished. 3 or 4 of them were shackled to their beds. You know, there was shit and stuff like that, evidently. Now, the creepy thing, too, is that when the authorities got to the house, the mother, Louise, seemed like surprised, like, what are you guys doing here? Almost like she didn't think there was anything wrong with it, which is one of the weirdest things to me. But also, when the authorities found the kids, they didn't realize at first that some of them were adults because they were so malnourished and they were so small. They thought all of them were children, and they didn't really find out that some of them were in their 20s until later on when they were all taken to various hospitals and things like that for treatment. Now, it should be noted that, you know, whatever these crazy people, these crazy parents were up to, they had apparently never been reported before. There are no records that they'd ever been reported to the authorities or Child Protective Services or anything like that. Even though, you know, after this news story came out, you know, some people said, oh, you know, it was weird that like the kids would, they would all come outside like to mow the lawn or something like that. And then they would all go back inside and they wouldn't talk to anybody. And they said, oh, they looked very pale, like they, you know, never came out to see the sun or anything like that. And a couple of neighbors said that when they tried to speak to the kids, you know, the kids would freak out like, you know, we're not allowed to talk. We're not allowed to tell you what our names are or anything like that. But like I said, it didn't seem anything egregious enough that anyone had ever reported them, which in a way is even spookier that they, that this had been going on for such a long time and no one really knew about it. Now, this family, like many families that have this many children, were, as far as I can determine, were evangelical Christians, had some preachers in their extended family, and the children were all homeschooled. Now, the interesting thing, too, that came to light after the news story came out was that someone that had bought the house in Fort Worth, Texas, where they used to live before they moved out to California, said that when they moved in the house, they took pictures of the condition of it and stuff like that. And they said that the house that had all these windows broken out and boarded up and stuff like that, and that there was like shit all over the walls and the carpet, and that a lot of the backs of the doors had scratches on them as though somebody had tried to get out and stuff like that. So like I said, this has been going on for a really long time, and it's the creepiest thing in the world. I will put some of the photos that I found online of this family. I'll put some of them in the YouTube video. Some of them, it's weird because some of the photos had the kids' faces blurred out, which normally you would do if they were if you were a minor. But, you know, some of them don't have that. So I don't know why some of them were blurred out and some of them weren't. But it's just so creepy. They had all these pictures of them, like from Disneyland and from the wedding and everything like that. And they all looked smiling and happy and stuff like that. And you have to think, like, what the hell did the parents say to those kids? Like, you know, look happy or what? We're not going to feed you or anything. I mean, obviously they weren't feeding them anyway. But anyway, it's just a horrible, horrible story. And like I said, it made the rounds. I found articles about it on CNN. I found it everywhere. So it was kind of a big deal. So, you know, that's kind of our current event for the day. Kind of yucky. But I thought it kind of went with the whole topic of today's show, which is kind of ostensibly about family values in a weird way. So I guess it kind of fits in. So now that we've kind of covered that news story, let's get on to the main meat of the episode, which is the UK video nasty controversy. Now, as I said, this is a topic I've been wanting to do for quite a long time, probably ever since we did the show about the Satanic Panic, because this is kind of a similar thing. Full disclosure, I do not live in the UK. I used to go back and forth there quite a bit, from the mid-90s to about the late 2000s, because I used to be married to a British person, so we would go back and forth to visit his family, usually once a year. So I've been there a lot. And also, I should say that my ex-husband was super into, you know, old exploitation films and old horror films and stuff like that, particularly the Italian horror movies and stuff like that. So he knew a great deal. And, you know, he grew up in Britain at around the time that the whole video nasty panic was going on. And he had several books about the topic, which I read over the years and things like that. So I do kind of have some kind of passing knowledge of it. Less so about what happened subsequently. So for that information, I'm actually mostly sourcing from a site, a UK horror site called Realm of Horror, which has a list of all the video nasties and what happened to them subsequently, how they were released and things like that. Now, it might be hard for people in the US to fathom how big a deal this kind of was in the UK in the early 80s, because we didn't really have an equivalent, at least not in regards to movies or home video or anything like that. Probably the closest equivalent that happened in the United States would be the whole Parents Music Resource Center, the PMRC, and everything like that, that were trying to label, you know, music records and things like that. Like, you know, the whole furor over Two Live Crew and, you know, their obscene lyrics and stuff of that, things of that nature. So that's probably kind of a similar thing. I don't feel like, I mean, I do remember that era, but I don't remember it being quite as big a deal as it seemed to be in the UK with the video nasties. So what I wanted to kind of do is sort of give like kind of a rundown of how the whole thing took place and shit like that. And then I kind of want to maybe get into after the break some of the movies, you know, that were on the infamous Video Nasties list, why they were on there, you know, the difference between ones that were on there, ones that were left off, you know, the whole kind of arbitrary nature of it. Maybe go off on some other kind of tangents about it and stuff like that. So even though, I guess, you know, the main part of the whole video nasty panic didn't really come about until, you know, the early to mid 80s, there were actually kind of precursors of it, starting in, you know, the maybe about the mid 70s. Now, where a lot of the controversy arose, now in Britain, they'd always had the BBFC, British Board of Film Censors, that type of thing, you know, equivalent to the American MPAA. Who would watch the movies, screen the movies, and who would rate them, you know, for particular ages and things like that. Now, in the US, sometimes, I don't know if it's quite as publicized over here, sometimes movies are cut in the US also, but usually they're cut to get a particular rating. Like, you know, the MPAA will come to a filmmaker and will say, you know, this is going to get an X rating or, you know, the more recent NC-17 rating if you don't cut, you know, X, Y, and Z scenes out of it to get an R. And most filmmakers will do that because if a film has an NC-17 rating, a lot of theaters won't show it and things like that. So, you know, they at least want an R rating. So sometimes they will cut things out because of that. So it seems like prior to home video becoming a thing, there wasn't really a huge deal about movies that showed in the theater in the UK. And ironically, a lot of the movies that would cause so much controversy later on when they came out on home video were actually passed with no cuts or with minimal cuts to show in the theaters. Now, the argument that they made about that was because, well, when you go to a movie theater, you know, the movie has a rating and, you know, no one of that age theoretically is supposed to be under there seeing that movie anyway. So it's not really that big a deal. Now, it should be noted there was no law really. I mean, there was a law about movies. There was an obscenity law and stuff like that. The obscenity law came from 1959. It was updated again in 1977, but it was mostly, that was mostly having to do with porn films. Now, one of the first movies to kind of catch the attention of the censors and kind of maybe presaged a lot of the video nasty phenomenon later on was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which came out in the early 70s, 1974. Now, this movie was submitted for certification, you know, or for rating, as they would say in the US, to the BBFC. Now, the guy who was in charge of the BBFC at the time thought the movie was very well made, but refused it a certificate because he thought that it was too violent for an 18 rating, but didn't see where it could be cut to bring it into, to bring it to the standard of an 18 movie, just because the movie is based so much around the whole atmosphere. The whole premise of the movie really is what makes it horrific, because it's not just a case of, oh, let's cut out this gore scene and stuff like that. Because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre doesn't, despite its title and its reputation, is actually really not all that gory. So there's really nothing you can cut out. So the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was actually denied a certificate and actually didn't show in the UK for quite a while, if I'm reading it correctly. So, you know, there was, like I said, kind of a precursor to the sort of later on, this whole thing about what can we show, what can be cut out, and things of that nature. But then along came the late 70s and the home video boom. Now, I've talked before on the show, I believe it was on our movie review of Time After Time, and I've talked about this on my blog too, that I kind of count myself lucky that I kind of came of age like right around the time when the home video boom was, you know, just getting really big and things like that. And it might be hard for younger people to understand that there was a time, and I remember this time, like when I was a little kid, that you couldn't just see whatever movie you wanted to see whenever you wanted to. I mean, a movie would come out in the theater. If you didn't see it in the theater, then you would have to wait until it came out on TV. And sometimes that would be years and years. You know, you couldn't just like go rent it. You couldn't just stream it like you can now. It's like, you know, if you didn't see it, you were kind of out of luck. So in the late 70s, in the US and also in the UK, people began to buy video recorders and began to be interested in renting movies to watch at home. Now, there wasn't a lot of stuff to choose from back then because major film studios in the US and the UK were actually kind of reluctant to jump on board with this whole home video thing because they were worried about piracy and things like that, which, you know, still nowadays, and now that cat's way out of the bag. So I don't think it's just kind of quaint like to think that they were worried about it back then. But, you know, people are going to copy the videotapes and, you know, give them to their friends and stuff like that. And people aren't going to pay. It's the same, you know, tale as old as time. So a lot of the major studios wouldn't release their big movies on home video for a really, really long time. So since people had spent shit tons of money on Betamaxes and later VCRs, they obviously wanted some stuff to watch on them. So there was kind of a gap in the market. Now, since the law for the cinematic showing of movies had not taken into account the home video boom, there was actually no law regulating any movies that came out on home video. So pretty much for a while, anything went. So in this kind of gap caused by the law and by the major studios not wanting to release their big ticket movies on home video for fear of piracy, then all of these kind of little fly-by-night distribution companies popped up. And their main meat and potatoes, since they couldn't get any major Hollywood productions or any large productions or anything like that, was to import cheap, shitty exploitation movies from other countries. You know, in the UK, they imported a lot of American slasher movies, a lot of infamous Italian films, which are super gory, and they would put those out. And for a while, they were not regulated. And what they would call that now was pre-cert, as in pre-certification, because there was no requirement for home video. You didn't have to give them to the BBFC to be caught or to be rated or anything like that. You could just, it was kind of like a Wild West kind of thing. You could just put out whatever. Now, everything went along like that for a little while. People were just renting slasher movies and Italian zombie movies and porn and stuff like that from these just little video, mom and pop video shops that had popped up all over England. And this went on for a little while, but then the problem arose, and it's actually kind of funny how this came about. The problem arose mainly from two movies, actually maybe three movies. Now, Go Video, who was one of the independent distributors, they had imported a little movie called Cannibal Holocaust from Italy. Now, to kind of get some publicity for this movie, they took a copy of their movie and they sent an anonymous letter to Mary Whitehouse, who was then the head of the National Viewers and Listeners Association. Very religious woman, one of those very super Christian, morally upright, busybody type old ladies. So they sent a letter purportedly complaining about this filth and everything like that to Mary Whitehouse along with a copy of the movie. Now, this was actually meant to stir up outrage, stir up publicity and stuff like that for their movie, you know, just like you would do, you know, it's a small business and they're trying to get attention somehow. And this horribly, horribly backfired on them because that action was one of the things that brought this unregulated video market to the attention of a lot of the moral watchdogs of the day. And that's kind of what ended up spearheading the entire video nasty witch hunt, a moral panic or whatever you want to call it. Now, another thing, too, that came about was the American film The Driller Killer by Abel Ferreira their distributor had actually put out like full page ads in various video magazines and newspapers and stuff like that advertising the movie. And they perhaps unwisely for the advertisement used a still from the movie, which showed a guy, like a pretty graphic shot of a guy getting a drill right into his forehead. And this was another thing that kind of spearheaded the whole thing. And there was also another movie that kind of added to it too. These kind of three films were sort of the thing that kind of kicked off the major part of the panic, SS Experiment Camp, one of the many Nazi exploitation movies, which would turn up on the list much later on. When attention was drawn to this movie, you know, a lot of the people of the BBFC and stuff like that are like, oh my God, we can't have movies of Nazi atrocities and stuff like that, and all this kind of sexual violence having to do with Nazis. And they just didn't really take too kindly to it. So it was probably a combination of those three things that sort of kicked off the whole brouhaha about the unregulated video market and all of these imported horror films, mainly horror films, that some people believed were, you know, responsible for corrupting Britain's youth. Now, one of the main players in this was the infamous Daily Mail, which it may still be. When I was over there, it was either called the Daily Fail or the Daily Heil, as in Heil Hitler. An infamous kind of right-wing tabloid that pretty much once the moral panic had started, they ran a story pretty much every day about how this or that movie had caused this or that crime. Most of it was false or completely exaggerated, but they kind of took it upon themselves to quote-unquote ban the sadist videos, and that was one of their big flagship crusades in the early to mid-80s. So Mary Whitehouse, the recipient of the copy of Cannibal Holocaust, she took it upon herself to start writing letter after letter after letter, you know, talking about these horrible degenerate movies and they're causing all kinds of problems and all this other kind of stuff and they should be banned and blah, blah, blah. She even wrote letters to the BBC and things like that, you know, about some of the stuff they were showing and things of that nature. So she just basically just went off on a tear. So what ended up happening, since there was no law specifically regulating home video or movies on home video, so what they decided to do, they said, well, you know, until we can get something passed, we will just say that these movies fall afoul of the Obscene Publications Act, and, you know, which gives police the authority to go in and seize copies of the movie. Now, this was all well and good, you know, not from my point of view, obviously, but from their point of view. But the problem was that a lot of times, I mean, there were so many of these videos, you know, nobody had time to watch them all. They were just flooding the country from all over the place. And so at first, there was really no, you know, it was a very arbitrary distinction, like which ones could be seized and which ones couldn't. You know, very famously, one raid, I believe it was in Manchester, and they went in a video store and seized a bunch of titles that they thought were, you know, ran afoul of the Video Obscenities Act. But one of them was The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, which is a comedy. It's a musical comedy with Dolly Parton. And so that was seized very famously, just and things like that. So it was getting to a point where police were like, okay, well, if you want us to seize the videos, fine, but we don't have any idea which ones to take. It's like, you know, we haven't seen them. We don't know what's in them, which ones it's just the cover, it's just the name, we don't know. So eventually there had to be a list produced so the police would know which titles were quote unquote illegal or, you know, could be taken off of shelves and which ones could be left there. Now that kind of opened up a whole other can of worms because yes, they did finalize a list. Problem was the list was pretty much just as arbitrary as not even having a list would have been, because I mean, there was stuff on the list that is just who knew why it was on there. It was just put on there because it had, you know, a lurid sounding title or a lurid looking cover, you know, and really the film wasn't that gory or wasn't that bad. And, you know, meanwhile, there were a lot of other movies that were arguably worse than some of the ones on the list that were for some reason did not come to the attention of the censors and, you know, passed by completely unremarked. And I'm going to get into that a little bit after the break, but it's just the whole arbitrary nature of this is very funny to me. And that's why I kind of wanted to go into some of the movies that were on the list, some of the ones that were left off, you know, why some of the ones that were on there and, you know, things of that nature, because that's kind of stuff I find fascinating. So since we're getting about to the halfway point, I'm going to take a break right here. And when we come back, I'm going to discuss some of the individual films that were on the list and why they were on there, and just some other kind of little trivia about them and stuff like that, because I love this kind of shit. I love horror movies. I love exploitation movies of all kinds. And I kind of want to get a little bit into censorship and whether, you know, whether or not I feel like this is ever justified or anything like that. So we will talk all about all that when I come back, and we are going to take a break, and we will be back in just a couple minutes.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Pinter Kaifek Bond, the Axeman of New Orleans, the Cleveland Torso Murder, who put Bella in the Witch Hour, the Solder Children, the Phantom Killer, the Black Dahlia, Summertime. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena, by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House of Fire, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Tenebrae's Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, we're back talking about the video nasties. So once a list was produced of all the prosecutable titles on video, subsequently, now this went on for a couple of years, subsequently, 1984, a conservative member of parliament named Graham Bright actually submitted a bill that was going to be called the Video Recordings Act, 1984, which made it an offense for a video movie to be sold or rented to the public if it had not been run through the BBFC for rating or for cuts or whatever. So now let's talk about the infamous Video Nasties list. Now this list, and you will find many copies of it around the internet, consisted of 72 films that were on the BBFC's shit list at one time or another as movies that could be prosecuted if they were found on the shelves of rental stores and stuff like that. Like, you know, they were allowed to be seized if they were seen. Now, it should be noted that of these 72 films, only 39 of them were ever successfully prosecuted. Some of them were seized. Some of them were later dropped from the list. Some of them, they attempted to prosecute them but failed. So, you know, there are really only 39 of them that were considered, you know, the worst of the worst. And even then, like I said, it's a very arbitrary distinction, but only 39 were ever successfully prosecuted. There was also a kind of supplementary list, ones that could be seized that were kind of in a limbo. You could seize them and then try to prosecute them and things like that. So there were a bunch more movies on that list. And then there were some other ones that were kind of, you know, in a gray area. And I'm kind of going to go into that as well. Now, it should be noted, and, you know, even though this happened later on, I think I'll mention it now, even though a lot of these movies were banned outright or had huge amounts of cuts or, you know, were seized and people were even prosecuted in a few instances for having them in their stores or selling them or renting them or whatever, after James Furman, who was head of the BBFC during most of the video nasty panic. After he retired in 1999, the standards for censorship and stuff like that were relaxed massively. And most of the movies that were on the Video Nasties list back in the day have since been released uncut in the UK. And even ones that still had cuts, it seems to me, and maybe some of our British listeners can specify this a little bit more, but it seems to me from what I've read that really the only thing that still gets cut nowadays is actual real cruelty to animals, as turned up in a lot of the cannibal movies, most famously Cannibal Holocaust, and sexual violence, rape scenes and things like that are still kind of an iffy proposition. Those seem like the only things that get cut out of movies nowadays. But like I said, the majority of the movies that were once on the Video Nasties list have since been released in the UK completely uncut. Some of them have been shown at film festivals and things like that. So like I said, it's been a massive relaxation. And honestly, you know, with the advent of the internet and stuff like that, censorship is kind of like closing the barn door if the horses have got out. It's like, you know, there's really no way. I mean, if you want to see a movie in its uncut version, you know, there's an uncut version in the world somewhere, on a torrent site, or you can order them from overseas, because even ones that have cuts in them in the UK, a lot of times the US version or the version made for mainland Europe don't have any cuts. So you can get them from there too. So it's almost like, I think the BBFC, aside from realizing that they have may have been a little overzealous back in the 80s with some of the movies, especially when you see some of them now, they're just ridiculous. Like, why would anybody cut that? It's not that bad or anything like that. But I think they also realized that there really was no point. I mean, you know, like I said, if you wanted to see these movies, there's you can easily see pretty much any of them that you want to nowadays. Now, one of the most interesting things to me about this list, like I said, is the very arbitrary nature of it. Now let's talk about a movie called Axe, which is also known as California Axe Murderers, sometimes known as Lisa Lisa. Not a terribly gory movie. It was originally released in the cinema, in movie theaters in the UK with about 3 minutes of cuts, and was later passed uncut in 2006. But the weird thing about this movie, one, other than the fact that it's like hardly gory at all, and there's like, why would you even cut it? But the weird thing is that there was another movie by the same director that was called Date with the Kidnapper that was very similar, a similar amount of gore, similar kind of vibe, similar kind of thing, that did not turn up on the list. And I'm going to mention that more than once because that to me just seems very strange. It seems why this movie was put on the list and not this other one, you know, because sometimes the ones that turned up on the list were far less gory, far less upsetting than some of the ones that never even get mentioned. And I just find that really interesting. And probably the most egregious example of that are some of the movies of Lucio Fulci. Now, I'm a big Fulci fan. I like all his gore movies. I've even liked a lot of his other, because he made a shit ton of other kind of movies too. I think I talked a little bit about him on our show about Giallo movies. Now, he had three movies on the Video Nasties list, these being The Beyond, Zombie, also known as Zombie Flesh Eaters. I think it's more commonly known as Zombie Flesh Eaters in the UK. Here, it's just known as simply Zombie. And also House by the Cemetery. Now, I'm really into all three of those movies. I think they're great movies. They're classic zombie movies. But the interesting thing to me is that even though these three movies were on the shit list, the Video Nasties list, interestingly, City of the Living Dead was not put on the list. Now, it was seized a couple of times, but it was never put on the list. It was never official that it could be seized or anything like that, even though City of the Living Dead has a scene of a woman barfing up her own intestines.
This is nasty. This is some shit you come up with. This is how you are.
Which, like I said, is a lot worse than some of the stuff that they cut out of other ones and stuff like that. So I just find that really interesting that of all this stuff, like his three movies on the list and City of the Living Dead, it didn't even turn up on there, which I thought was very weird. And I should be noted, it should be noted too, I'd like also like to mention too that even though, I mean, there are some good movies that turned up on this list, most of the movies on here are really not good. They're just like shitty, cheap, schlocky exploitation movies, which, you know, I dig those and stuff like that. But I feel like the bigger deal that was made of them because they ended up on the Video Nasties list really made people remember them obviously way more than the quality of the movie did, because frankly, if a lot of these movies had not turned up on the video nasties list, everyone would have just forgotten about them. They wouldn't have cared about these movies because most of them were pretty bad. I mean, most of them are pretty cheap. Some of them laughably cheap. So, you know, as in the case of any kind of moral panic like this, the more somebody makes a big deal about you shouldn't see this, it's filth, it's this and that, that's going to make people want to see it more. And I think that's definitely something that happened during the video nasties furor. And I think a lot of horror fans, people that were into exploitation movies, were kind of happy when the official list of the 72 video nasties came out. They said, oh, that's how, here's a recommendation list. Now I know what movies to look for and stuff like that. And it just ended up making these movies a lot better known, a lot more infamous and notorious than they probably would have been. And like I said, I think that's something else that people that are young now probably wouldn't understand. But, you know, back in the old days when it was a lot harder to get your hands on, you know, foreign movies like on VHS and stuff like that, there was kind of a thrill of the forbidden. And I think the video nasty thing like played right into that because, you know, already as soon as like all these like you conservative, like evangelical Christian kind of people are like flipping out about these particular movies, it's kind of like what happened in the Satanic Panic, where everybody talked about Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. And, you know, death metal records and everything. It just made people want them more, especially teenagers, because, you know, adults, you know, tell them not to do something. And that's obviously automatically what they want to do. So obviously being on the video nasties list helped out a lot of these movies and made them a lot more infamous, even though a lot of them are pretty shitty. I haven't seen them all. I've seen a lot of them, but some of them are just terrible, terrible movies. And not to do with any gore or anything like that, just very cheaply made. The acting is shitty and stuff like that. But like I said, there were some good ones on the list as well. Now, some of the good ones that turned up on the list that I wanted to mention, famously, Mario Bava's Bay of Blood, sometimes known as Twitch of the Death Nerve, sometimes known as Bloodbath. This is actually a notable film because and I talked about it a little bit on our Giallo show as well, because it's kind of like the first slasher film, really. It's, you know, I know people can argue, well, Psycho is maybe the first slasher film. Bay of Blood is actually the first thing that you would recognize as a slasher. Is very slasher-esque. And actually, Friday the 13th Part 2 ripped off two scenes from this pretty much directly. So that was also on the list. Blood Feast, considered probably the first splatter flick from 1963, Herschel Gordon Lewis. You know, this is obviously a terrible... Now, I love H.G. Lewis movies, although 2000 Maniacs is probably my favorite. But Blood Feast is pretty good, too, in a so-bad-it's-good kind of way. And you have to think that, you know, even though the special effects are laughable now, I mean, obviously the blood is just tempera paint and, you know, it's just, you know, it's just laughably bad. But, I mean, this was very, very ahead of its time, very subversive for 1963. I mean, nobody had seen a quote-unquote splatter flick, and this is kind of the first one. So it was also on the list. Now, I also want to mention, and I talked about this a little bit before, you know, a lot of the cannibal movies that came out, a lot of them were Italian, a couple of them were Spanish. Now, these ones were kind of a special case because a lot of the cannibal movies, not all of them, but a lot of them that came out, specifically Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Apocalypse, and stuff like that. Most of the reason they ran into trouble, and a reason why a lot of them are still, they're not banned anymore, I don't think. One or two of them might be. But why a lot of them have been released still with cuts is because they have actual animal cruelty in them. Like I said, Cannibal Holocaust famously has people killing a turtle. And, you know, it was staged for the movie. And that's kind of shitty. I can understand why they would take something like that out. Although, you know, I would argue that, you know, they made the movie a long time ago back in the 70s. It's like, you know, you can't have those animals come back and not be dead anymore. So it really seems kind of pointless to cut it. But I can see, too, that if you don't really want to see real actual cruelty to animals, then, you know, maybe you would prefer to see the cut up version of that. The interesting thing about Cannibal Holocaust, though, is that it was actually it was rumored to be, and actually the filmmakers were actually either dragged into court or threatened to drag into court because some people thought it was a snuff movie. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on. It's actually not. All the people that are in it are fine. The actor showed up in court. It's totally fine. But the animals that were in it, not so fine. So, you know, I can see why you might not want to watch that. Some other decent ones that appeared on the list, Andy Warhol's Flesh for Frankenstein, which is actually a very good movie. It's very campy, very fun. Udo Kier is in it. Interestingly, even though Flesh for Frankenstein was on the nasties list, his other movie, Andy Warhol's other produced movie, Blood for Dracula, was not on the list, even though Blood for Dracula is a lot gorier than Flesh for Frankenstein, at least from my point of view. Another movie that got put on there, probably erroneously, was the movie Funhouse, made by Tobe Hooper, who obviously also made the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, this movie, I don't think this was supposed to be on there, because it's, you know, it's a standard slasher. It's not terribly gory, especially not as gory as some of the ones that weren't even on the list. But it is widely believed that Tobe Hooper's Funhouse was mistakenly put on the list. The BBFC were actually thinking of a movie called The Last House on Dead End Street, whose alternate title was The Funhouse, and that one was a lot gorier. So that's probably the one they were targeting, and they accidentally got Tobe Hooper's Funhouse, which is actually a pretty decent slasher movie. Stars the chick that played Stanzi in Amadeus. Little fun fact for you there. Now, two of the most infamous movies that were on the list and are actually two movies that I actually really like, were very famous rape revenge movies. There were a lot of those in the 70s. I Spit on Your Grave and Last House on the Left, Wes Craven's very famous movie. Now, these two movies, like I said, that seems to be, and that seems to be the only remaining, one of the only remaining things that will get your movie cut in the UK nowadays is sexual violence, rape scenes, stuff like that. Now, it should be noted, I Spit on Your Grave, starring Camille Keaton, is a movie that I actually really like. I can understand if you don't like it. It's pretty hard to watch. The rape scenes in it are particularly grueling, but I wrote actually a big long thing about it on my blog where I kind of argued that if you're going to show a rape in a movie, I actually think it's more socially responsible to show it like this, to show it realistically and to show it really sick and horrible. It should be uncomfortable to watch because, I mean, that's what it's like in real life. So I don't really have a problem with showing that in a movie. However, it should be noted, I Spit on Your Grave is one of the few movies that was on the Video Nasty list originally that is still available in the UK only as a cut version. Now, they've cut less out as the years went on, but last I heard, the version that's available in the UK still has 2 minutes and 54 seconds cut out of it, mostly cut out of the rape scenes, because the rape scenes in this are very long. They do go on a very long time, and they're very upsetting to watch. But, you know, obviously you can get an uncut version in the US and in other parts of Europe. Same thing with Last House on the Left. I think Last House on the Left has since been released uncut. And the interesting thing about that, too, is that there's another movie, and I think it's called House on the Edge of the Park, which was also on the Video Nasty list, and is very similar to Last House on the Left. It also stars David Hess, who was in Last House on the Left as Krug. But House on the Edge of the Park was actually much worse. But I think as far as I can tell, they are both available, uncut now. I also wanted, as far as the whole arbitrary nature goes, I also wanted to mention Dario Argento, who I'm obviously a big fan of too. Now, a couple of his movies turned up on the list. These would be Inferno and Tenebrae. Tenebrae only on there generally just because of the scene at the end where that woman gets her arm cut off and sprays blood all over the kitchen or whatever. But the interesting thing to me is that even though Inferno and Tenebrae were both on the list, Suspiria was not. Even though the gore, I mean, from my point of view, the gore is comparable in all three of those movies. So, like I said, I don't know why Inferno and Tenebrae were targeted when Suspiria was not, because, you know, that's all. And like I said again, you know, the movie review that's coming out this week will probably be Suspiria. So Dario Argento fans represent. And then there were also movies on there that I don't really have any idea why they were on there, like Visiting Hours, which actually had some pretty big stars in it. Michael Ironside was in it. William Shatner was in it. And not much gore and stuff like that. But for some reason, that ended up on the list as well. Now, aside from the list of the 72 main movies that were on the list, the 39 that were prosecuted and stuff like that, there was also another list called Section 3 Video Nasties. And these ones, the law said they couldn't be prosecuted for obscenity, but they could still be seized under a less obscene charge. You know, the same kind of thing on here. There was movies like Martin, Mark of the Devil, some more cannibal movies and stuff like that. And that was another thing, too, that I wanted to mention, that a lot of the movies that turned up on the infamous 72 Video Nasties list were really only put on there because of their cover art or their titles. Like, you know, Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Apocalypse. Okay, those were very gory. They had animal cruelty in them and stuff like that. But then you get another movie like The Cannibal Man from Spain, which didn't have any gore in it at all, really, except for a short thing at the beginning, but was probably only put on the list because of its name. I don't really think anybody had sat and watched it or anything like that. They just put it on the list because it had cannibal in the name. And there were some other cannibal ones that turned up on the Section 3 one as well. You know, along with Dawn of the Dead was on the Section 3 list, as was Deep Red, another Dario Argento movie, also called Profondo Rosso. You know, Night of the Living Dead, things like that. So, like I said, it's just kind of a ridiculous sort of thing. Now, there were also some movies that were also banned by the BBFC, but were not considered video nasties for whatever reason, even though some of them were horror movies. One of these was Maniac. Which actually, when they submit, which they wouldn't even let them show it in the cinema, or in movie theaters, it was denied a certification. So since it was denied certification for cinema, then they weren't going to show it. They weren't going to allow it to be released on home video either. Now, it was eventually released in the UK, but it still had about a minute of cuts in it. I remember seeing that movie. The only part I really remember being bad was that guy getting scalped, and it wasn't really that big a deal. So I don't know if that was the scene they took out or whether. New York Ripper, a similar kind of thing. That was also released in 2002, but it has had 29 seconds cut out. Another interesting one was Straw Dogs, Sam Peckinpah's movie. Now, this one actually played in the theaters uncut when it first came out, but right around the whole video nasties furor, it was pulled, but it wasn't officially put on the list. And then it was re-released in theaters in the 90s, but then when they tried to submit it for video release, it kept getting denied until 2002. Like I said, after the main guy had left, the main guy that was causing all the problems, he had left, and the standards were relaxed. So it was finally released in 2002. There were other ones that were seized over the time. Basket Case, for example, Macabre, City of the Living Dead, which I mentioned before, Lucio Fulci movie, and stuff like that, but were never really prosecuted. Now, an interesting thing, too, is that there were some movies that And I had some British pen pals back in the day, and one of the most infamous movies that they had wanted to see but never had been able to was Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange. Now, even some of my friends in Britain thought this, they actually thought that the BBFC had banned A Clockwork Orange, and that was actually not the case. It wasn't technically banned. It was just because Stanley Kubrick would not allow the film to be seen there because evidently he would try to show it. He had gotten death threats and he was afraid that it would be caught and things like that. So he pretty much withdrew it from consideration. It was like, well, I'm just not even going to show it here because it's too much of a pain. So it wasn't the BBFC banned it. He just didn't want it shown there because of the atmosphere around the censorship and everything like that. So that was actually a movie that a lot of my British friends wanted to see, and they had never been able to see it, which at the time, you know, it's one of my favorite movies. So I thought it was very odd that they weren't able to see it, especially since it's kind of, you know, it's set in Britain and stuff like that. But the film was eventually released uncut right around 2000 after Stanley Kubrick died. Now, I also want to mention something, too, about the main part of this, like I said, went probably from the early 80s to the mid to late 80s. But it kind of continued into the 90s a little bit. Now, Child's Play 3 was one of the ones that got attention later on because the media tried to establish a link between the movie Child's Play 3 and the infamous murder of Jamie Bulger. Now, this murder famously happened in 1993. The little boy was in a shopping mall with his mom and kind of wandered off, or his mom lost track of him or whatever. And these two other little boys lured him out of the mall and actually ended up beating the little boy to death and leaving him on the train tracks where his body was subsequently cut in half. Now, the media made much of the fact that these two little boys that had done this, that they had watched Child's Play 3 and that they had got the idea from there and everything like that. Now, there's actually no proof that they'd actually even watched that movie. I believe one of their parents had rented it or something like that, but they, you know, there was no proof that the kids had seen it or anything like that. But in any case, the media kind of stirred up this big thing about Child's Play 3, and it was, you know, causing our children to kill other children and oh my goodness and all this other kind of shit. So the movie was effectively vilified. And there was another murder that went on around the same time, which was the murder of Suzanne Capper, who was a young girl who was kidnapped and tortured and was eventually set on fire. And that kind of happened around the same time. So Child's Play 3 kind of got associated with that as well. Video Nasties also kind of blamed a little bit in the case of the Hungerford Massacre, where a guy shot and killed 16 people. So, you know, the argument here really is, you know, how much do these movies really affect people's behavior? I tend to think, yes, there have been studies that show that children that watch violent things, you know, tend to act more aggressively. But, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of some of those studies as well. Like they weren't done particularly well, or, you know, there were no controls or whatever. I can really only speak from my own personal experience here. I've been watching horror movies, you know, ever since I was a little kid. I was always really into scary movies and horror and stuff like that.
My mom wouldn't let me watch that when I was a kid.
I mean, when I was a kid, I never had a problem distinguishing between real life and what was in a movie. I mean, some horror movies did scare me when I was a little kid, but I never thought that they were real. So, you know, I don't have any children now, so I can't really say. But on the whole, I kind of feel like as long as everyone in the movie is like, obviously, I don't agree that you should be able to show snuff films or child porn or anything like that, because, you know, there's a consent issue and stuff like that. But generally, as far as horror movies go, it's, you know, it's all fake. You know, I'm not going to get into the whole morality of, you know, if people are messed up, if they watch this and stuff like, because I love this shit and I'm, you know, normal and well-adjusted as far as I can tell and stuff. So this kind of stuff doesn't really bother me. They're just fun. They're entertainment. And honestly, I, you know, there's still a distinction to be made. I don't particularly like to watch, you know, real things, you know, people really getting executed or people, I don't get any happiness out of that. And I would rather not watch them. But horror movies, like I said, they're just fun. They're fake. It's just another, you know, a lot of people have compared them to a roller coaster. You know, it's like an endurance test, something like that. You know, and I would agree with that. And honestly, I think, too, that people who are really into horror movies, you know, you have that outlet. You're seeing violence, but it's fake. It's stylized violence and stuff like that. In a way, I think it kind of would make you less likely to be into violence in real life. And, you know, like I said, I don't know how much scientific backing there is, I do, but that's generally been my personal experience. So, you know, I don't want to watch snuff movies or anything like that, which I'm sure are probably floating around the internet somewhere nowadays. But, you know, I don't really have a problem with horror movies in general. I don't really have a problem with kids of a certain age watching them because I did. And, you know, I didn't develop any psychological problems or anything as a result of it because I knew they were fake. And honestly, too, I think it's, you know, it's up to the parents, really. So I really don't think it's the purview of, you know, the BBFC or anyone like that to cut things out of films because they think that it will make people degenerate or that kids might see it or something like that. I mean, you know, kids might do a lot of things. So in that way, obviously, I think the whole Video Nasty Fear, just like the whole Satanic Panic over here, thing over here, overreach, too egregious and stuff like that. It's just, it's entertainment. They're movies. They're not real. So that's kind of how I feel about that. And also, like I said, it's the whole standardization of it was just so arbitrary. And some movies were on the list and some weren't. I mean, some passed with no cuts. Some had a ton of cuts, even though they were very similar. So, you know, there's really no way of regulating this kind of thing effectively. And especially not nowadays. Now that we have the internet, you can see pretty much anything you want to see anytime you want to see it. So really, I don't think there's any way that this can be regulated or brought under control in any way whatsoever. And I don't really think we should even try because, like I said, it's fake. So I guess that will kind of do it for this episode. Hope you guys enjoyed this kind of rambly discussion of horror movies because, you know, like I said, this is something that I decided to do since Tom wasn't here and I had to do another one by myself because, you know, I'm kind of the horror movie person and he's not as into them as I am. And I've seen a lot of, like I said, I've seen a lot of the ones on the Nasties list. So I thought it was something that I could do without too much trouble. So as I said, there will be one more movie review that's just going to be me on my own. It will probably be Suspiria, and that will probably be up on Friday. And then after that, starting with episode 76, which, like I said, will probably be another episode of A Haunting. We'll see how that goes when he gets back. Should have Tom on the back because he's coming back on January 26th. Other than that, please remember, if you like the show, to like, share, subscribe on all your social media. And if you would like to support the show, please go to our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, and give a monthly donation. Or if you would rather not use Patreon, then you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there is a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account to which you may make a one-time or several-time donation, whatever you'd like to do. We appreciate any support. Also, if you're into true crime, please check out my book, The Faceless Villain, which is out in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. I still have a few codes left for free audiobooks if you would like one of those. Have to promise to write a review, though. It doesn't have to be long. But just contact me through the show or anything like that on our Facebook page, and I will make sure you get a code. I still have a few left. And thanks to everyone that has written reviews so far. Also, check out Zazzle.com/13oclock. We have some t-shirt designs and stuff like that. I'm eventually going to put some more up. I believe there's 6 or 7 up right now. I'm going to put some more up as the months go by, whenever I have time. Also, don't forget to check out my last movie review, which was also just me, which was David Lynch's Mulholland Drive, one of my favorite movies ever. So go check that out if you haven't already. And that will do it for episode 75 about video nasties. See you next time. Bye.